Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council audio podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and today we're going to get right to it and speak with our guest, Don Robison. Don is the seed administrator with the Office of Indiana State Chemists. Don, how you doing today?
Doing well, Jason. Doing well. Good to be back on the program.
Well, thank you so much for being back on the program, and whenever we get Don on, it's for a lot of statistics and a lot of good information. Kind of, we like to get Don on because he's got all the kind of, he can wrap things up, kind of put a little bow on it for us and give us a little perspective on what's going on hemp-wise in Indiana. And Don, let's just start with that. Let's take an overview of 2022 and kind of, you know, give us an idea of, you know, how many acres we had of hemp out there, how many people participated, how many licenses we had out there, just kind of those little fun statistics to kind of give us an idea of how big the hemp industry is in from your perspective from Purdue up there.
All right, Jason. Yeah, we've got a cool new toy on our software that only I can see. It's kind of behind the curtain, this dashboard that shows me a lot of those numbers. Mm-hmm. So those are things that I have to report off to the USDA monthly, and then I have to report it at the end of the year as well. So pretty good place to focus. We had 86 total licenses. Mm-hmm. Of those, 57 were growers.
Okay. Now, how did that compare to, that sounds like a low number. How did that compare to 2021?
That's down. That's down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I'll pull up the 2021 numbers here. We were at, well, actually, it's only down one on growers.
Oh, okay.
So it's down one on growers. Yeah. We were calculating differently in past years. And what we found was people would contact us with different names for their businesses.
Okay.
They may have two or three different names for their hemp businesses, mm-hmm. one that was retail and one that was grower, and we were counting all of that.
Okay.
So last year we were at 80. This year we're a little bit higher than that for total.
Because I thought we were into the hundreds there at one point.
Yes, 116 is how we counted it last year.
Okay,
but
okay.
Based on only one name for a grower, or utilizing all their names as only one entity, we're actually up a little bit on total and up one on growers.
Okay.
Now, that being said, we only had 24 counties this year in Indiana where there was a hemp crop planted.
Oh, okay.
And 3 years ago when all this started, we were up about 85 counties.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you're right in that numbers have definitely gone down as a general rule, but fiber is now in play, and there's a lot more fiber acres grown than there was cannabinoid acres grown.
Okay, and what kind of numbers do you have on that?
Fiber, we licensed 1,100 acres, almost 1,200 acres.
Okay,
I think we ended up having planted probably 500, 600 in that range of fiber. We had 645 total acres planted outdoors of any hemp crop, and we had 20,000 square foot, so about a half an acre indoors,
mm-hmm.
planting. Now, indoors would all be cannabinoids of some kind. So outdoors, we probably had a little bit of grain to go in with the fiber.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's back up here a little bit. When we talk about the number of growers, the fact that it may have contracted, now it sounds like it only contracted by one last year, but more for the last couple years, but that's not necessarily a bad thing because, again, you would assume as the business or as the industry grows, people start getting smarter and they start working smarter. And, again, you have people that jump in thinking it's a quick buck. They found out maybe they lost a few quick bucks, but as it goes through the years. So again, I would not assume that fewer growers or fewer people involved is a bad thing or a negative thing.
No, I actually think it's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a few people that jumped in. I don't know if they thought it was a quick buck or not, but I don't know why else they would jump in if they didn't. And a few of those lost everything,
mm-hmm.
Went hot, lost it all. So as one of them tells me, he's putting on his big boy pants. He's going to come back to the table next year. So, you know, that's good. But I'm seeing the same growers who have been successful or have been at least getting close to break even, staying with it.
Good.
Now for 20, when we get to talking about 2023, I'm seeing a really interesting trend. So don't forget to ask me about that.
Will do, will do. And before we go on, I also want to throw in, a lot of times when we talk about the consolidation or an industry that's getting smaller, a lot of times that's because the larger businesses are taking over and pushing the small guy out. That's not necessarily the case, though, in this situation, I assume.
Correct. That's not the case at all in Indiana. You know, I think it's not the case in fiber, for sure. We've got a large amount of growth in southeastern Indiana on mm-hmm. fiber, mm-hmm. and that goes from small farmers up to very large farmers.
Mm-hmm. The point we want to make, of course, is the small guy can still get in this industry. There's still time to enter.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. I'm seeing a trend, and I think I'll see this trend even more in future years. The cannabinoid business contracting down to 3 or 4 dozen growers, mm-hmm. and the fiber business growing substantially.
Mm-hmm. Is that because it's easier for the to do the fiber or outside growing?
Well, it's more consistent. There's not as much labor involved. Mm-hmm. You utilize regular farm equipment, so from that standpoint, it's a cheaper point of entry, but what we've got is a overseas company who has already put out a press release, but I'll leave it up to them to promote themselves. An overseas company who is bringing in a fiber producing process. They're bringing over the equipment and everything from Europe, mm-hmm. and they have been the impetus for that fiber growth in southeastern Indiana.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Now let's talk about compliance in 2022. Again, we're getting into the weeds here, but these are things we need to discuss. So let's talk about that. What kind of trends did you see in the compliance area?
I tell you what, it was the best year we've ever had by far, by far. Mm-hmm. We had 2 years ago, we had a 0.57 total THC rating for the whole year. That was the average. Mm-hmm. Last year it was 0.37 if I'm remembering correctly, and this year it was 0.207. Mm-hmm. So the average crop was compliant this year. In fact, out of 78 different grow sites, we only had 6 that went hot, and of those 6, 4 were remediated. Mm-hmm. So we only had 2 crops destroyed this year for being hot.
And how did that compare to the last couple of years? How did that compare to the last couple of years?
Wow. Vastly different. Vastly different. You got to remember, 2 years ago, we didn't have this remediation option. Mm-hmm. So everybody that went hot had to destroy.
Okay.
And so, you know, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but we had a lot of people that went hot and had to destroy. Last year, it was a lot better. But still, you would say it was significant, the number of people that had to destroy their crop. Even though the remediation option came into play mid-year last year, it was not terribly well known. We did our best to get the word out. Everybody that got a hot test got an email letter from me saying that remediation was an option.
Okay.
And I got several phone calls about that from the people that went hot, but only a couple actually successfully. Actually, only a couple tried to remediate, and all of them that did were successful.
Okay.
So in 2 years of running of remediation, everybody has been successful in remediating.
Okay. Now, is it also a point of the growers learning lessons, learning from year to year, learning from each other? The industry seems to be working together fairly well. So are these, is this a result not just the remediation, but also lessons learned?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The biggest news in my mind that has affected this is, in past years, the USDA mandated, and Indiana therefore followed suit, that you had to harvest within 15 days of sampling. Mm-hmm. Well, what that did is that put a mindset with the grower that he wanted to get the highest CBD that he could get before he sampled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that fed, like say, that mindset that, you know, I've got to get close to the edge. I got to play the edge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, this year you had 30 days to harvest after you sampled, and a lot of people that gave them a sense of relief, and they would say, yeah, I got 30 days. I'm going to go ahead and get sampled. And they got sampled when it was early in the process,
mm-hmm.
and they still had 30 days legally, no matter what their THC level was. 29 days later when they harvested, it was a legal crop if they tested compliant.
Okay.
So that made a huge difference in people's mindset.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So as we head into 2023, you asked me to remind you of something, and I forgot what I was supposed to remind you of, but hopefully that reminds you.
Yeah, so...
Heck of a question, wasn't it, Don?
Yeah, we're really at an interesting spot. In 2023, we're going to be well up on acres. I mean, well up, more than double the acres.
Why is
that? In 2023, we were in 2022, probably coming up on close to three times the acres.
Hmm. That's
going to be fiber.
Mm-hmm. Is this just is this the handful of new people coming in, or the people that are already involved expanding? Why is it growing so much here from this year to next year?
The people already involved are going to expand. I don't have any new people yet.
Okay.
For the fiber, but there are new farms involved.
Okay.
New landlords
mm-hmm.
involved.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of new landlords involved.
Okay.
So we see that coming. We also have gotten a lot, as in maybe a dozen or more, growers have historically grown. They've grown since 2018, and they've told us that they're not going to grow next year, but they're going to keep their license because they have enough crop from the last year to process and keep everything rolling in their operation.
Okay, okay.
So they're staying in business. They're not going to grow, or they think they probably won't grow in 2023, but they have enough crop, they're going to continue to process, so they're going to keep a license.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hmm.
So that's an interesting twist.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of saw that coming later in the year when people started mentioning that. We saw a little bit of that from 2021 to 2022. But I think we're going to see a lot more of that in 2022 to 2023.
And right now, licensing is currently open. And when is the time period? When does that door shut? Does it ever shut for applying
never
for
shuts.
A license?
Never,
okay, never shuts.
Yeah, never shuts. And let me tell you, we have a whopping three people licensed for 2023.
Three people licensed for 2023. Is there a deadline? I mean, if you're already licensed, is it an annual thing? When do you
it
expire?
Is.
Okay. And what happens if you expire?
December 31st.
Okay, so
well,
everybody's on the same.
People, right. What I tell people is you want to do it as soon as you can, but we understand not everybody has their funding together, has their plan together, you know, mid-December.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, this time last year, we probably were at 40.
Oh, okay.
So we've got a lot of people considering their future moves,
right.
But our biggest growers have not licensed yet.
Okay.
So from an acre standpoint, we now have 80 acres licensed.
Mm-hmm.
We're out of what I think will be a potential 1,800 acres next year.
So
1,500, 1,800.
Right. So from an administrative point of view, these all have to be in by December 31st, which means you're going to get a rush of applications all at the same time.
That's the perfect world.
Oh, okay.
The real world is they start in late November and they end in sometime in February.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Technically, they are without a license. Technically, they are illegal
mm-hmm.
after December 31st.
Mm-hmm.
However, we tell them, I tell them regularly, get licensed as quick as you can. If you're in the process of doing your background checks, which you have to do every year, do those kind of things, get all that put to bed before you license. Make sure that 2022, all the crop is shown up in our system as harvested. It's all shown up as disposed of. If you had a crop failure, make sure you're completely done with 2022 before you bother licensing for 2023.
Okay.
So the other thing we tell them is make sure you tell your local police department that I have crop. If you're in that situation, I have crop and I'm in the middle of renewing my license.
Okay.
So that they're on the same page. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody is going after them unless they have crop and they don't bother licensing.
Okay.
At that point, they're fully illegal, and we will, if we know about it, we'll turn them over to the state police.
Okay. So there's no worry in your mind right now that only four people have licensed?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I think it's a natural progression of where we've been going.
Okay.
Less cannabinoid growers, more fiber growers. The fiber growers are working out their cropping plans on some cases large acres. Mm-hmm. So, because they're working out those cropping plans, they haven't decided where they're going to put hemp, the fiber hemp. So they have other blocks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They may or may not have crop. They probably already have sold it to the large processing company that's coming in. So they may technically not have crop in storage that is theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're just fine. The guys growing cannabinoids are trying to see how much they need to grow because they've got X amount left over from 2022. So I think it marks a slowdown in cannabinoid growers, but I do not think it marks a slowdown overall in people that are going to be involved in the industry.
Okay, good. Good deal. So a couple other things we want to hit on here while we still have you, while we have the time. We're going to talk about the farm bill, but the Indiana 2023 legislative session. Any thoughts on that? Anything that was good, bad, indifferent? Your thoughts on that and how that may or may not have affected hemp growers going in here to 2023?
The 22 session didn't affect the hemp growers at all. One thing that did affect hemp growers is that most hemp growers in Indiana know that our office, the Office of Indiana State Chemists, has an authority to do emergency rulemaking authority.
Oh, okay. What does that mean?
That means that rather than go through a 2-year process, which it normally takes 15 months, 2 years to get regulation and administrative rules in place, we have the authority to write that change into rule and submit it to the state and get it put in place within a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The reason that's so important for hemp growers, and if they have any concerns about that, please don't be concerned. The reason it's so important is the USDA has been changing things, minor things here and there. All of them are in favor of the grower, mm-hmm. every one of them.
Mm.
But they've been changing things for the last 2 years,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and one of those things was that remediation we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the fact that we could react to that very quickly and put remediation in place just a matter of a couple of weeks after the USDA put it in place.
Okay.
Well, several states couldn't put it in place until a year later because they had to get legislative approval or they had to go through the rulemaking authority process, rule promulgation process.
Mm-hmm.
So that's huge for the grower in Indiana and the industry in Indiana that we can react that quickly.
So
one thing they do need to know that does affect 2023. We went into an issue. We got sideways with the USDA this year because of late reporting. That late reporting came because we were getting late reporting sometimes months late,
mm-hmm.
from the Indiana growers.
Okay.
That has to be cleaned up. And because we already had the authority for a late fee, we we will be charging that late fee, or at least having that as an option for growers that do not report by July 15th that they've planted a crop, or they will not plant a crop, or if they just tell us they're going to plant but they haven't planted yet. So we have to have that all off to the USDA right around July 15th, July 20th every year. And this is the third year in a row we had, well, we probably had dozens and dozens of grow sites, probably 30 grow sites that we didn't know about. We'd never been communicated with at all.
Wow.
So each one of those, if it continues, we have that late fee, which is $750, that can be charged for those growers that are not in compliance. That puts them federally not in compliance and not in compliance with the state. And we're trying to, we've tried the honey. Now we're trying to stick.
Right, right. And again, there's no, I mean, you've got to work both ways. There's really no reason the growers can't do that in a timely fashion. There's nothing holding them back.
Absolutely.
Other than just procrastination. And it makes your job a lot harder.
Yes.
And the communication
right.
with the government a lot more difficult. And then we already know that's difficult enough as it is.
Right, right. Yeah, it's you know, it's funny. The growers, and this is one thing I will openly pick on growers about.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them. Some of them are fantastic. But growers give us an email address when they license get their license and show up their crop and things like that. But then they don't check that email address for alerts.
Okay.
Because we send them alerts regularly. And we've got several, and it's some of the same ones over and over and over, Jason. So we're now in year four of not commercial grow, but year four of common grow. And it's the same people every year. They give us an email address and then they don't check that email.
Well, it's 2022 going on 2023. Regardless of your age or your electronic sophistication, it's something you're going to have to be able to participate in and be able to do. And again, like you said, your hands are tied. At some point, you got to start finding people, and you don't want to do that. You're trying to work with them. But again, people that slow down the process, it's not good for the entire industry.
Right, right. Well, it takes us a tremendous amount of time to follow up on 35 or 40 grow sites. And like I said, same ones over and over. 35 or 40 grow sites that we don't know whether they were planted or not. We don't know.
Wow.
You know, we're trying to plan for the sampling season, which will be a couple of months after that.
Right.
And we've got inspectors that we need to plan not their route necessarily, but plan their workload against their other responsibilities. And, you know, the other responsibilities are the other things that we do at the state chemist office, where we regulate feed, fertilizer, seed, pesticides. So those are also busy times for the seed business,
right,
to sample, because we're getting into the fall seeding season.
Well,
so
you know, and
we've got to balance that out.
Yeah, and irregardless of that, I mean, you guys bend over backwards. I'm not a grower, so I don't participate in that. I don't know all the hoops you have to jump through and everything. But from my perspective, you guys bend over backwards to help the growers. There's a lot of people in this state that bend over backwards to make sure and help them and hold their hand and things like that. So when it comes to something as simple as responding to an email back to you to make your job a little easier, again, we're not dogging on the growers, but that is, they need to step up to the plate and you know, and think of other people and give that respect. And as I said, you know, a young industry, but I would think eventually when people like that continue to do that, you have to not only look at fining, but, you know, is this person holding us back, and should we in future years still be giving them the license?
Yes. Yep. Yep. And I will say, I'm not dogging on most of the growers, but there are a few that I'm dogging on. I'll just bleep about it.
Right. If the shoe fits, and again,
yeah,
it's not just
if the shoe fits.
Right. And it's for, right, you know, again, it's not like you make it difficult for people. So that's where, and again, not to get on them, but you're making it as simple as possible and begging people to reach out to you and contact you. And when they don't do it, yet they want the benefit of the industry, you know, something's got to give there, you would think.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, if it, and it would be different if it was random people each year that mm-hmm. just we work with people, as you say, we easily work with people that had a medical problem or something mm-hmm.
sure,
like that.
Sure.
This is not those situations.
Right, right. If it's just you, I only check my email once a month or something, then you know, again, you may need to look at a bit. And if you're listening to this and you feel like you're being targeted, then maybe you are, and maybe you should just try to help out, just step up a little bit better. But so we'll move on here, Don, and get your thoughts on the farm bill. Is that helping, hurting? I assume it's helping, and I assume we're moving forward. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, the farm bill, I anticipate, I don't know all the changes, but I anticipate quite a few changes to the hemp program, mm-hmm. which goes back again to the ability to update as needed with mm-hmm. the emergency rulemaking authority. I think the farm bill will require, if I had to say it, I think it will require some changes to the Indiana state law mm-hmm. the year after that. Because we're gonna, you know, there are certain things everybody has probably heard about in the industry, the possible moving of fiber and grain away from standard testing. Mm-hmm. But you know, states can already do that. We didn't feel like we were there yet with fiber and grain because grain has gone hot at a high rate in mm-hmm. Indiana. Mm-hmm. Fiber, we have had some hot crops historically in Indiana, so we didn't feel like we were there yet. But the fiber and grain exemption is definitely something that is being looked at for the farm bill. Mm-hmm. Had a USDA meeting last Thursday, and one set of questions the USDA asked all state regulators is what their feeling is on the grain and fiber exemption, what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it, what it would take for them to support it, if they would support it at all. So mm-hmm. it's definitely something on the federal docket. Mm-hmm. The other thing, I think if we ever get, and I don't know that we will, but if we ever see a 1% hemp legal number, it's going to be in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. The farm bill would be naturally the year to make that decision if it's going to be made. Mm-hmm. So I think that's being talked about in Washington as well. I think there are going to be quite a few updates to the program.
Is that just real quick? Is that 1% threshold? Is that going to be good or bad for small growers?
I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good. The one thing that concerns me is the reason the hemp biomass pricing is so low is because too many people got involved in the industry. Mm-hmm. If it goes to 1%, I'm really concerned that we're going to have a whole influx of people growing that will go hot at 1%, mm-hmm. you know, type thing, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because they don't know what they're doing or they're going to push the envelope at 1%,
right,
where you know they're already out of the industry for pushing the envelope at 3.3.
Okay.
So,
right.
So you know those kind of things, I'm concerned about because of that. I think there's a lot of concern in some other areas of the hemp world about the 1%. It's funny, that's what a lot of people were pushing for mm-hmm. just a couple of years ago, and mm-hmm. now it's not seen as something that everybody wants.
But of course, with the government, you know, their job is to create more problems, so that would be on your
yeah.
shoulders. But so, Don,
right.
where can people go to get more information about all of this, and do we have a call to action? What do we need folks to do here to make your job a little easier for you this year?
Well, number one to make our job easier is read your emails.
Okay, there we go. Number one. Check your email.
We only send out paper copies, certified letter, if you're 45 days late.
Okay. So if you get the letter, you know that something's wrong, and you need to open that letter
yes.
quickly and check your email.
Right, right. I think if they want to know what's going on, pay attention to what's coming out of Washington from senators, representatives, and the USDA on what is being discussed about the Farm Bill. Mm-hmm. I think that's where all of the energy is going right now. Mm-hmm. I don't see another, other than a minor reporting change here or there, which we have to deal with because of our software. We deal with that instead of the grower. Mm-hmm. In most states, the grower has to deal with that.
Oh.
We take that off their shoulders, mm-hmm. and which is another reason we got to get this information in time.
Right.
But so other than a minor change that we get from the USDA on stuff like that that affects us, I don't think we're going to have any more changes out of the USDA until the Farm Bill.
Okay.
I think they've said we're just going to be at rest for most of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. And then on your website, is it, what kind of updates do we get on that or from there?
We are open and active on the website. I am going to redo at the suggestion of some growers. I am going to redo reporting your crop and FSA number and share sites.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of growers, not many, but a couple of growers said that there were some situations that I didn't address in that, mm-hmm. and they were accurate, just situations we hadn't thought of at the time of the videos.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to redo those early in the year. And the video on how to get your digital fingerprints for your hemp license, that's still good. The one on registering, setting up your account is still good. How to apply for a license is still good. But how to report your crop, we're going to update that a little bit.
Okay.
So that'll come up in probably January, February.
Okay. And the website is OISC, and that stands for Office of Indiana State Chemist, OISC.purdue.edu/hemp, and that should get them to where they need to go, correct?
Right. If they didn't catch that, they can Google OISC hemp, two
okay.
words,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be the first option.
Okay, fantastic. So there you go. For those of you that can't figure out your email and don't quite know Google yet, you just go in there and type OISC space hemp and you will find that website, and you can go there and check that out. And Don, we really appreciate the time that you always give us and the information that you provide for us. It's always very helpful, and we do appreciate it. Again, I always try to help you make your job a little easier. I feel like if we can get folks to kind of fall in line, and again, we're all excited about the industry, but we also need to help each other and understand that we're not the only one involved. So other folks are involved. Their jobs rely on that, depend on people doing things in a matter of, in a timely fashion, I guess I should say. And that's kind of what we've been beating on here today. So hopefully some of those listening now will pick up on that and help out a little bit more. But Don, everything you've done and the folks that you work with, I don't know how the industry could have survived here in Indiana without you guys.
Well, thank you. We have a tremendous team. Some people in the background, Kim Skies, that does a lot of the software compliance work.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Fritz, who helps people get their crop reported. Just a tremendous number of people beyond that help. But those are the two that come closest to dealing with people. Mm-hmm. And it's really been, as compared to 400 growers in 2018, and doing it by myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Probably with a pen and paper.
Easier now. No, we did it with Excel spreadsheets.
There we go. I guess it wasn't that long
it's
ago, was
easier
it?
Now.
It just seems like it's been.
Long ago.
Seems like it's been forever since we started.
It does. It definitely does.
All right. Well, Don, we certainly, again, do appreciate it. And unless there's anything else we needed to hit on here, I think that's probably we could probably wrap this up and let you get back to work.
Okay, Jason, and Merry Christmas to you and the listeners. When you're in the software, if you need help, there's a little link at the very bottom of every page in the software you can click on and get an email right off to our service team.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. All right. Once again, Don Robison, the seed administrator, the Office of Indiana State Chemist. Don, once again, thanks so much, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Jason.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much, Don, and that is going to do it for this edition of the Midwest Hemp Council audio podcast. Again, I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be back with another one next month. So long, everybody.